Across the United States, Indigenous families are searching for their loved ones. For closure.
We would tell each other, what do you think she said? And what was her last words? You know, did she cry for help or did she pray?
The missing and murder Indigenous women.
Hauka, this is Mary.
Ketanani, this is Sylvia.
And welcome to the Native Sisters Podcast.
So at this point, when you guys hired the private investigator, when did they start to, they went to the police as well, right? Like after
we went to the police multiple times, they immediately started trying to find him, and they had talked to numerous people, and they found out actually a lot of good information. Like I said, they tried contacting St. Paul repeatedly. They went to the Duluth Superior Police Departments with my parents. They actually had were the ones to get the information that my brother was killed and everything. And they had told us that because we refused to leave. Like, they weren't supposed to tell us because the police didn't want us to know, I believe, at that point.
Right.
But even then, as you know, no body, no crime. Until
and that's what they said. No body, no crime.
Yep. You find us a body and then we'll investigate.
That's what Duluth said.
The Hermantown Police Department, when our private investigator had went there with the location
and recordings from the person that drove, that Tommy Hintz that followed, that was her friend,
that she found the boatman,
the boatman
in Grand Portage.
Yes.
They had the record audios of her statement and everything of what had happened, but when they told the police said, well, no body, no crime.
Right.
Bring us a body and then we'll investigate. So it's like,
you know, they had recordings and
recordings.
They had, because the private, we were recording all of our stuff ourselves also, like everyone we spoke to and everything. And then obviously the private investigators had all their audio recordings of everyone they spoke to. And it was like, to the police, if there was no body, even if you have someone stating that they know for a fact someone was killed or whatever, no body, no crime. It doesn't matter. They're not even going to investigate.
Yeah.
Like, you have to give that proof. So it was, as a family, we all started looking into ways on how we can find a diver to go find my brother. Like, we all knew that it had to be done. And if the cops weren't going to help, then we had to do it.
Yeah.
So we used to do maybe about 5 years. We volunteered for Amber Alert and we didn't think about it, you know. We called our friend that was head of Amber Alert here in the cities, and he called Lori, I can't remember her last name, but called her, and they brought us into the BCA to make a statement, you know. And then by time we pulled into the parking lot, everybody was messaging us saying that they just seen the missing persons on the news of our son, you know. And we're like, wow, why didn't we do that in the beginning? We were trying to get help. We hired our own private investigator. If we would have never sold our other house, and my husband works for the painters union, if we would have never sold that, we would have never had the money, you know, to pay for the private investigator. It was like for a dumpy Super 8, it was like $200, right, for a room.
Yeah.
Plus, we had to buy food every day. The gas from Hermantown passed in the whole area of Duluth all the way to Superior from 7, sometimes 6:30 morning, because we'd go have breakfast and lay flyers out, you know,
and passing them to cops and everything.
Yeah. And
like, here you go. Will you speak? Like, there was a couple cops that would actually look at you and, like, yeah, you know, talk to you, where they'd be like, you know what? We heard about this. It was put on our board today. And it's just like, well, he's been missing for a week and a half now, you know, like, how is it? Are you just now hearing about it today? Well, they would actually, like, respond and, like, look at you. But then there were some, I believe, like, Superior Sheriff's Department, they wouldn't even look at you. They wouldn't even look at the flyer. They would just completely treat you like you're inhuman. Like, you're not even there. You don't matter. They don't care what you're talking about. And it's just like, how are you going to treat me like that for whatever your feelings are? Let's be real. You're mad because we're fucking up your cases. We're doing something that you don't want us to do. So you're not even going to give me the respect of looking me in the eyes, or at least acknowledging that I'm trying to speak to you, or look at the flyer I'm trying to hand you. Mm-hmm. So it's just one of those things, like, okay, well, obviously we need to try and talk to all these police officers. We need to try and humanize my brother, because clearly to them, he's just a criminal. He's just someone they don't deem as being worth to be found. I mean, and even then in Duluth, the amount of missing women, the amount of missing Native women is ridiculous. It's actually heartbreaking. There's like a window with like all the missing pictures, because, you know, it's the Twin Ports. The shipping containers come from all over, you know, and they go from Superior, Duluth to Michigan, and they could just straight out into the ocean.
Yeah.
So it's like there's so many women trafficked from that area, and it's heartbreaking. And it's like, well, if the cops are doing this to us, who's looking for all these women?
Nobody.
Who's looking for these children that are missing? And it's like, you know, you think back, you know, bring us a body and then we'll investigate. Well, if you won't even look for a missing person until you have a body or like real solid proof that something bad happened, no one's going to find these people. No one's going to look. They're not looking. And it's sad. Like I said, we had to hire a private investigator just for them to be that nice white face to the police. That nice, you know, professional person for them to actually listen to. But they still didn't listen to him, because they viewed my brother as that much lower. He was so beneath them. And I hate to say, it's like same time as we were going through this, that Gabby Petito,
she was disgusting.
And she was all over the news and all this stuff. And it's like, we can't even get nothing for my brother.
FBI. Why?
Is it because the color of his skin? Is it because he had a criminal record? Like, it doesn't make sense.
No. That's part why we started our podcast was because of the epidemic of missing, murdered Indigenous people, but not just women, it's men too. Like,
yes. That's what, like, I've heard is when men go missing, most of the time they're murdered. You know, when the women go missing, they may be getting trafficked. They may have been murdered already, but most likely if the men are missing, they've probably been murdered.
And they don't care. And you know, after we found Ricky, do you think that they would investigate the crime? We do have someone from the BCA that has been helping us substantially. He's been amazing, you know. But do you think the cops would help? No.
His body was found on tribal land?
Yep.
Yes.
So does, like, what is BCA?
Bureau of Criminal Apprehension.
But does, like, BIA or like the tribe?
No.
In Minnesota, I believe all the tribes, but or all the reservations, but one or two have a deal with like the state, where pretty much state police deal with it instead of the BIA. I had contacted the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they told me because he wasn't currently an enrolled member, missing off of tribal land, they don't get involved.
But see, my tribe, the kids that are, they can't be enrolled. I'm enrolled. You know, I'm from Belcourt, North Dakota. I was born and raised there, and my mom moved us here to the cities when I was like 14, you know. But they wouldn't even do anything for Ricky, you know. They didn't even, just because he's, you know, they're trying to erase the enrollment now, you know. And it's disgusting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I agree. Disenrollment everywhere.
So did you guys pay for the divers yourself?
So
no. So what had happened was
we went to the BCA. Okay. Soon as we found out the ping and we got acknowledged,
they had the exact coordinates of the location. Because the boatman had they had actually pinged the exact location where they dropped his body. For some reason, I guess the boatman wanted to save the location or something. It's kind of weird. Like really weird, but we had the coordinates. So my mom and dad had went up to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and they spoke with a detective down there.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting them in contact and they actually finally spoke with the lady who hired the boatman, Tommy Hintz. And they took her formal statement and went out and they had rescue divers and the Tom Crossman. He was actually someone we were looking into hiring to dive down there. But ultimately what it was if we pay anyone to do it and it's not their people doing it, it could actually affect the investigation because it's evidence and all that situation. So luckily the BCA did get involved and they finally started investigating. It took 2 weeks before we actually had the police help investigate this situation, even though we had without a doubt, you know, statements from people who were involved that he was murdered and that, you know, they had dismembered him. We had all this evidence, substantial evidence. And it took 2 weeks for my parents to go to a whole different entity to get help.
And all that stuff leading up to you guys having all this information was from you or your private investigator, right?
Yep.
It wasn't any law enforcement at all.
No law enforcement got involved at all. None.
Nope. We went and spoke to so many people and got all the information we could. Our private investigator was hitting every other avenue he possibly could. I mean, there were just things that we knew we had to do because if we didn't do it, no one was going to.
No.
Yeah. No one was going to look. No one else cared but us. So it just fell upon us to put in the footwork, I guess, because ultimately we knew that if we didn't do it, he would never be found.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So how many people did you find out were involved in the whole situation?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So when Jake killed my son, he was killed and murdered in St. Paul, you know. He was one day finally told us after people were starting to pack up and leave, but they were packing up and leaving because they were getting rid of evidence, which was a gun that he was shot. My son, they finally told us he was shot multiple times and the kill shot was through the arm, through the lung, and through the heart. When I hear that when my son was shot multiple times, I believe that when he was dying in the back seat, okay? The people, we've never met these people before, okay? We didn't know them. But the person that killed my son, Ricky knew him since they were in middle school? High school? And it's kind of hard to know that you know these people that did that to your son, but these people that we went into their trailer house, have you ever seen a hoarder's trailer house? Never been to these people's house. This house was, this trailer was so bad and it stunk so bad. Like, it was so bad, but her kids got taken away, actually, you know. We went there, and you know, when I seen the stuff on the porch, I didn't know or had any idea.
All the buckets. All the buckets
and the cement that was on the porch. This guy went and bought buckets, cement, tools to help dismember him. One of the tools broke. When they brought my son to this camper to dismember him, there was more, quite a few people. And I said, what, did they sit around and watch my son get dismembered like they were around a campfire roasting marshmallows and making s'mores? I said, you know, we haven't even dealt with Wisconsin yet. We're just dealing with Minnesota.
As of now, because it's two separate states, so the murder is charged in Minnesota and then the dismemberment is charged in Wisconsin. So as of now, we're just dealing with the murder. So there's only three people who are being charged in the state of Minnesota. And also it's the difference of what they say is,
yeah,
it's not a crime to be there when someone is murdered. Yeah. You know, but what about accessory and things like
aiding
and abetting? But they said it's not a crime to be there if someone was killed.
It's not, right?
Supposedly.
I think in other states, they charge you even if you're just there.
Right.
Exactly. See, and that's what I thought it was in Minnesota. But, you know, my question is, like, the teetering with the, you know, witness, using them for witnesses on drug cases or other cases pertaining that they want, because there are two girls that were in the car when my brother was murdered, and they're not being charged with anything. They're actually witnesses, according to the prosecutor.
They didn't say anything, right?
It took, after they found my brother's remains, after like we had like given them all this information that they were in the car, for the officers to go speak to these girls. And initially, one of them said she didn't know. She'd like played dumb and everything. But then now, supposedly, they're being honest and they're witnesses and everything. But
yeah, it's because they don't want to be charged with murder. So
exactly. But they were all, from what we've heard and the information we've gotten, is they were all like a part of planning on what to do with my brother, like how to get rid of his body, because, you know, they didn't want to go to jail. They didn't want to be caught. They, you know, so they all played a part in that. But according to prosecutors, that's all hearsay. We need like valid proof, something like not just recordings. You need them to make a statement about it, or they have to be willing to speak on it in court or something. So it's like teetering with the people that we know are involved, but we don't have that like solid, hard proof that a prosecutor is willing to take to court, when we know there's a lot of people who should be charged with something, right? But because we can't give it to the prosecution for them to say they're going to charge them, you know, or it's even worth charging, because I think a lot of these people, they're using on other cases. They're using to get them to speak on drug cases, and that's more important to them than any murder or anything. It's kind of sad, because they're just trying to use whatever links they can from my brother's murder to get big drug cases. So they're giving, obviously, people incentives. You know, it doesn't really matter if they know about what happened to my brother. They just want to know who they can give them for the next drug case.
also when they, so they crossed state lines from Minnesota to Wisconsin. That's not a federal crime. From West, from Wisconsin back over to Minnesota, dropping them in tribal waters, that's still not federal. But why is it federal to bring drugs across the state line?
There's no statute, no like federal law on transporting remains across state lines. Now, my brother, when he was like 18 years old, he was dealing drugs up in Duluth, Superior area. And because he crossed state lines from Duluth to Superior, they charged him federally. So he got what he was in jail for like 10 years.
He was 18.
He was 18 years old and he got a federal charge because he was transporting drugs across state lines. But in the same area, for them to transport his remains across state lines multiple times, that is not a federal charge.
And there was guns and drugs and money that went exchanged hands to get rid of my son's body.
They paid people in drugs, they paid people in money, and still they don't deem it as a reason to attempt to charge them federally.
That's dumb. And I've seen that you guys had a petition is on a petition. Yeah. That is it still like valid? People can still sign the petition?
Well, here's what happened. We did turn it in. We did go to Andrew Luger, it was his name, for the FBI investigation. He says it's not a crime. And we did sit down with them. They're still saying that it's not federal. They don't see any federal crime. You know, when they busted my son when he was 18, it was their informant that, you know, and when they did do that to my son, they did it right in the same area where my son was shot. They caught him in St. Paul. Okay.
St. Paul Police Department really hated my brother. And that's why it's sadly not surprising that they didn't investigate and that they're completely removed out of the entire case. Like, we have Cook County, we have the BCA, we have Superior and Duluth all involved in the investigation, but St. Paul, the area where he was murdered and lived, is completely removed out of the investigation. They're not spoken about at all. We're not even having trial in St. Paul because according to them, they could do it where his body was recovered. So it's all the way out in Cook County. So
murder was in St. Paul, right?
Yes. Right. Yep. Yeah. So they're refusing to even do anything in St. Paul, which is kind of sad because when court comes around, we're all going to be driving like 4 or 5 hours away to go to court just to be able to make it. And they're making court in the dead of winter. So having us go drive up all the way up by Canada, pretty much, to go to court is going to be extremely hard, especially to have like more than just our immediate family there. Like, if we want people out there to show support and everything, a lot of people ain't going to go. They're not going to be able to make it, let alone, gosh, if there's a horrible snowstorm and everything, we might not even be able to make it. Yeah. So it's sad that they're trying to, they've literally removed St. Paul out of it so like much completely that they're non-existent, that we are going to have to travel all the way just to go to court.
So Tommy is the girl. She gave her statement and told like what happened to him.
Yep.
Like, and then Jake was the one, Jacob Johnson. He was the one, he's the one that shot Ricky.
Yep.
And dismembered him.
And then Robert West assisted in dismember. Well, supposedly bought the tools. Not really sure his exact role.
But there's only three that are being charged, but there were other people there too.
Yes. Wisconsin is a whole new.
They're not even charging the boatman.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I don't understand that. Because now there was four 5-gallon buckets and a big tote bin, you know, and I think that's where
it is. There's no way one person could have picked up the tote and dumped it over the boat. When we watched the divers carry my brother back, like it took like 4 or 5 of them just to lift the tote to bring it into like the back of a truck. And it was just like, there's no way Rob could have lifted this by himself and pushed it over the side of the boat. Because still in the boat, you have to at least be able to lift something up to your knees, past your knees, to dump it in. So
yeah,
it's just, he obviously, at least the boatman assisted in dumping and doing that, whether he knew or not. But as people had stated, with where he dropped his remains, he had to have known what it was. There's no question, like, because he literally dropped them on tribal land right next to the Sioux burial ground. It was just really obvious, according to them, that he knew what he was dumping. He didn't believe it was just like valuables and a dead dog. You know, it's not likely with where he put them.
Yeah.
And if you would have seen the boat, you would have been like, when they said the boat captain,
they said it was a charter boat.
Yeah. You know what it was? A
small fishing boat.
A small fishing boat with the motor in the back with the handheld. And, you know, the Chad from the BCA said, Kim, if you ever seen that commercial with Flex Seal, you know, with the boat, that's what the boat looked like.
Yeah, they had like Flex Seal on the boat to keep it from obviously like leaking in spots and everything.
How can he, you know, carry this stuff in the boat and not capsize the boat?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And the Tommy, she had her kid in the back seat the whole time.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. They even stopped halfway to do a hot rail because she couldn't stay up because it was 11 o'clock at night. She's like, I was so tired. I'm like, it's 11 o'clock at night. You need to stop to do a hot rail. But yeah, but yet she's getting off with a slap on the wrist.
180 days.
She facilitated finding the boatman. She obviously speaks on, you know, I think ultimately what it is, she's speaking on drug cases, and that's what they care more about.
Well, she just got caught like a couple of months ago.
Yeah. Yep. And she got caught with, and she got a child endangerment, I think, charge. She got caught
with it with your brother. She didn't get any charge of child endangerment with that case.
No, not at all. And that's what's actually kind of comical, because I was just asking the prosecutors about that. Like, so why wasn't child protection involved with Ricky's case? Like, she literally says she had her son in the car and they stopped to do a hot rail and everything, you know, so it doesn't make sense. And now she got a child protection charge because she left her kid in a hotel room surrounded by drugs, and like they were doing drug deals, and it got like there was a raid, and it's just like,
yeah, she had a no cash bond or something before she went to court. Yes, before she appeared in court, she had a public defender and was
didn't even file the paperwork for the public defender. Somehow she had a public defender assigned to her. They were working out a deal with the prosecution and everything before she was even charged. Yeah. When we mentioned it to the BCA, the detective, he was shocked. Like, what do you mean? You know, right. Because he didn't even have some of the information that we had known, because my sister was actually speaking to her and she was giving my sister information about like what the prosecutor was saying and everything. And like how her attorney was working out a deal and everything. And it's just like, well, if even the officer who's going to be arresting her doesn't know any of this information, and technically you have to be charged to apply for a public defender. How does she have a public defender assigned to her? And then said public defender ended up recusing himself because he couldn't be her public defender.
Right.
And she ended up having to get another one. Even the judge was a little thrown off, like, oh, but I don't see no paperwork for your public defender. And he's like, well, you're just going to have to fill it out now.
Yeah. Odd.
Yeah. There's a lot of like
weird. It's more suspicious than odd.
Yeah. Exactly.
We're going through a lot of that stuff right now. And like we said, if you pull up Superior and Duluth, after my son's murder, there was a whole bunch of drug raids, a whole bunch of stuff that happened, right?
And yeah, they've been getting a lot of, arresting a lot of the dealers, the addicts, a lot of people involved in human trafficking and everything. Now that was like, so that was, that's obviously something really big up there. And like, that was something my brother was absolutely against.
Mm-hmm.
Like he,
trafficking.
Yeah, to him, women, children, they need to be protected. Like no matter what. And it's just like, he wanted nothing to do with that at all. He one time thought there was this weird van out there, like, and he seen someone push a girl into the van, and he chased the van down, trying to follow it, looking all over, trying to find them and everything, because it was like, oh, hell no. Like, they just took a girl, you know, like he's going through whatever he could to try and find them.
Yeah.
But that is really bad up in Duluth. It is.
Yeah. The trafficking, and it's sad because they find girls from reservations and they like bring them out there and then they're gone. They stick them on one of the ships and they're gone forever. Yeah. And like, there needs to be something more regulated. Like, that was one thing we've said is, you know, out of this whole situation, if we can try and like make a difference and help like other people, other families, you know, and like the human trafficking aspect of it, like that was something my brother was absolutely against. And, you know, if he could have made a difference, he would have. Like, so our goal is to try and make some sort of change out of this, like bring some good out of our negative experience and try and help people.
Yeah, I really like am annoyed by law enforcement, or whether it be like federal, state, local, tribal, when they just refuse to do anything for anybody when it has to do with like substance abuse, alcoholism, domestic violence, or like, you know, repeat offenders, and they're like, oh, you know, this person's not even worth it. But that's not fair to him or her. That's not fair to their family. That's not fair to anybody, the community. Like, you know, these people, like your brother, he's not a bad community member. He's not a bad son. He's not a bad brother. But to them, it is. And what they say goes, because they're law enforcement, and that's just not fair.
Right.
We see that a lot in a lot of places, that it's the same thing. Like, oh, they just ran off, you know, they probably are doing something somewhere that they're not supposed to be doing, which is not the case at all.
Mm-hmm. Or my favorite, they have a warrant, you know, so it's like, but if they have a warrant, doesn't mean they're going to hide from their family.
No.
You know, even if people have warrants, they still call their mom. They still, you know.
People who have warrants, the cops don't even arrest them. We've seen that happen. Right. Personally to us, we call the cop on somebody and they don't even arrest them, or like they have a warrant.
Especially now with COVID and everything. Yeah. They're like very
exactly. it's just dumb.
It's so frustrating. And we do a lot of stories, and it's the same story, because they don't help.
Exactly.
So frustrating. And then they're like, why do like Native people not like the place? Well, this is why, because they won't help us.
And everyone says, oh, trust them, you know, yeah, it's their job. Well, actually, it's not their job to like investigate missing people. They actually don't have to. And that's one thing we've found out. It's, you know, their discretion if they choose to, but they're not, it's not like our right for them to actually investigate if someone goes missing, especially an adult. And that's something I think that's sad, like at least a visit to their home, you know, to see if they're actually at home, or maybe, hey, for all you know, there's a dead body in their house and no one even looked.
Yeah. Has you said Jake was Ricky's friend since middle school. Has he tried to reach out to you guys?
We've all tried to reach out to him on numerous occasions, and he's not speaking to anyone.
No,
at all.
No, he's not even speaking, and all. He knows the system, so he's not.
He's gotten off on a few charges.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he has. He's gotten off on a few.
I just don't know how you don't have remorse for someone you grew up with, and that your family, like you guys known each other your whole forever, for a long time.
Right.
We've spoken to his dad, yeah, and his stepmom, and you know, they have shown remorse, but at the same time, it's their kid. So right, they're going to keep his secrets and try and, you know, keep that from us. But
so you don't, I know you don't know this personally, but do you know if he's admitting blame or is he?
No, he's not. Nope. He's not speaking anything
at all.
He's one of those where he will take it to trial and he will fight it no matter what. It don't matter if you have all the evidence showing that he's guilty, he's going to fight it. I believe as of now, they're self-defense.
He's claiming self-defense. And I don't know how he can claim self-defense. If he would have said self-defense and shot him and made the report, mm-hmm, you know, instead of going like weeks, he actually, when he brought my son over, they had a birthday party. He actually went to his daughter's birthday party. They all
that
went
same day.
Same day.
On Father's Day, after he killed my brother, he went to his daughter's birthday party.
Yes. And the two girls, his baby mom was the one that was driving. His baby mom was driving, and his girl that he was sex trafficking out was sitting in the back seat, and they had their daughter's birthday party on that day. They were, what was the name of that place in Duluth?
Edgewater
Water Park in Duluth. They all sat there and talked about how they were going to get rid of my son to make it disappear. They even talked about putting him into a pig farm, but there was cameras there. Yeah.
To them, it was almost like a game of how to get away with it. Like some of these people we've spoken to, I mean, I literally talked to I don't think they're married, the girlfriend of Robert West. I talked to her a lot, actually. She thought we were friends for some reason.
Yeah. We had to get evidence, you know, like that. That's how we did this.
But she sat there and tried to convince me because Jake had told her that he found peace in dismembering my brother. He actually was able to make peace with my brother in doing what he did. And she sat there and tried convincing me how it makes sense, how you could find peace in doing that. And I'm just, you know, like we have all these, like I have all these conversations recorded. I spoke to these people hours, like staying, and like they're all drug addicts. So it's like, I'm up at like 2-3 in the morning talking to these people for hours. And you know, six kids now. I got pregnant during the process of looking for my brother.
Two broken ribs and
pulled ligament in my knee, everything. And
so, you see what we went through?
Mm-hmm. But it was like speaking to these people and like hearing the things they had to say and their opinions even, and what they knew to be truth, but because it's not a statement made in court, it's considered hearsay. So it's like, and these people aren't going to go in court and they're not going to speak on it because it just makes them look bad and they're incriminating themselves. So it doesn't really matter anything they've told us, any recordings or anything, because it's all hearsay. They need that solid proof. But it's like, from what we've spoken, we're told by these people who were involved but won't get charged because there's no solid proof that they did anything worth charging them on. It's, you know, like Jake, he had made jokes about what he had done. He had made jokes while dismembering my brother. He had like played with his hand and stuck it out a window laughing at people, and like it was a big joke to him. I mean, and he says he was a friend of my brother. He says that him trying to claim self-defense, if he's claiming self-defense, he wouldn't have done some of the things, you know, he wouldn't have taken the enjoyment out of dismembering my brother as he did. And honestly, that's even what's even more sad is the fact that we know all these little details is simply because we had to investigate. A lot of the information that the cops have, we had to give them those leads. We had to tell them these things. So we know a lot of information we shouldn't, and that the police would rather us not know, because they didn't do their job from the beginning.
Through these drug charges, our Chad from the BCA has, I think he said last time I talked to him was like maybe 3 weeks ago, he had 141 reports that he had to follow up and write.
Oh, wow.
So imagine that, 141, you know, reports that he knows that he had to go meet with these people. They're still investigating and getting evidence as we speak. You know, people are coming forward. They're it's maybe hearsay of what they heard or whatnot, but they still have to go investigate. Now it's an investigation, you know. This is worldwide. He had told me he's even got a call from, where was it, around the world, where he said, I think in Japan, he said somewhere in that area. That's how this is, you know, it's a lot.
It is. So what could we do to help you? I know that you guys had a GoFundMe for Ricky. Is that still active, where people can make donations?
Yeah.
We were thinking about that, you know, and that was another thing. When we got our son, my son had one side of his body was all tribal, you know, tattoos. He had tattoos from his neck to his whole back and his, you know, side. My husband's Italian. The other side was Italian, you know. And Ricky had a portrait on the inside of his arm of his mom.
So, mama's boy, like I said.
But when they brought Ricky, see, the first time we got Ricky, they didn't have all of Ricky. And then they called us and said, we're missing something. Tom Crossman says, Kim, I promised you that I would get all of your son. And when they dove for Ricky and got all that, he says, but we're going back. You don't need to. I will call you. Me and my husband dropped everything and drove all the way to Grand Portage. okay? We got the rest of them. So imagine taking body parts out of cement. There's no way you can do that unless you use some kind of acid, right? Mm-hmm. My brother does cement work. So we got that stuff, you know, got Ricky's body bag and whatnot from the morgue. And there was not one tattoo. When the funeral guy says, "We can't identify Ricky by one tattoo," I said, "What do you mean? He was covered from waist all the way neck up with tattoos." And they said, "There's not one, but we do have his dental records and we know it's him. I just want you to know there isn't any." And I said, "Okay." Well, they said, "We need to make a decision right now. We got brought Ricky's body on a Friday." By time they thawed him out on Sunday, right, Raquel? By time Sunday, they said, "We need to decide whether you want to bury him or cremate him." So we went into the funeral and then they said, "Mrs. Balsamo, he's decomposing and he stinks so bad. We need to make a decision now." So we hurried up and we decided to cremate him because there was this eagle, and eagles kept showing themselves. There was this eagle urn, and I don't know if you know the story, and you guys probably don't, but it's called the Witch's Tree up in Superior, Grand Portage, okay? It's a tree that grows on the rock. Okay, so we seen this urn and we like, if we did decide, that's what it would be. And I talked to, by time I came over the hill, I talked to the funeral director, all of a sudden an eagle came right in front of my car, swooped down right in front of my car. Like, and if you look at on the Justice for Ricky page, you'll see the eagle. So, and I'm like, that's him. He's showing himself. We need to have him cremated. My grandsons told me, which is Ricky's godson, said, "Uncle Ricky came to me and he said he wants to be black dirt, black dust, so he can walk again." I never knew what he meant, but that's what he wanted. He wanted to be cremated.
Yeah.
This is his godchild that told us that before we even knew Ricky was shot, did this. He said, "Uncle Ricky came to me and he said his friend did this behind his back. And he showed me how, showed
and
us
And he said
how,
he shot him.
And through the seat behind his back.
Through the seat, and Uncle Ricky didn't see it. He didn't even see the gun.
And it was his friend. And do you know, we didn't even know that until we found out that he was shot through the seat.
It was one of those things where it's like, how does this five-year-old know something that we at the time didn't even know?
We didn't.
We kind of blew it off, you know, at
Kid
first.
Talking.
Yeah, but it was just like, he just knew. There were just things that he would say, you know, that he just knew. Mm-hmm. And it's sad because it's like, you know, I feel Ricky had came to many people in our family and kept showing them things. Like, even like my daughter, she's 14 now. She knew he was dismembered because she had a dream that he was all cut up, and, you know, but she dreamt that she was the person doing it. And it was, and this was before we even found out. And it was just kind of horrible, some of the things that, like, you know, even the small children in our family were, they just knew. And it was hard to have to go through that process and, like, try and tell them that, you know, that's not the case, everything's gonna be okay, you know, it's just a bad dream or a vision or whatever. And then when we started finding out more details of what had happened, to see that,
yeah,
they did see that, you know, he did come to them and, you know, he did obviously show them things, you know, like just what had happened and everything. And they were just like connected, I guess.
Ricky was a great uncle. He loved all of his nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
So much. And his sons. Baby Rick is amazing, you know?
Yeah. Well, it sounded to me like he was, you know, helping you find him. He was giving you every sign that he could to lead you there, because he didn't, you know, want you guys to never see him again. That's what it sounds like to me. I mean, I'm a real heavy believer in that, in all of this stuff that you're talking about. I know that that's actual real stuff that happens. You know, it happens to my kids, happens to me, not necessarily in this kind of situation, but it just in life in general.
Yeah.
On Mother's Day, I had a really bad Mother's Day. I didn't want nobody to say Happy Mother's Day. I didn't want no acknowledgement of Mother's Day. All of a sudden, I'm looking on the ground. I'm just really, really bad. It's so bad. You know, I'm so thankful that we have Ricky and I'm able to talk to him and Earn, and I kiss him every
morning. But you don't share them. You said you were going to share them, and I got to take them sometimes, but she don't share them with me no more. I take them, you know, sometimes. Okay, we'll share him. No, she won't let him leave her little area she's got. Baby. Wants to get out of your house, Ma.
But there was on Mother's Day, and it was like such a gloomy day, and I'm looking down. I always been looking at the ground, never looking up, and he goes, Mom. And I felt like he was, you know, talking to me, whispered to me. He goes, Mom, never look down. Always look up. And I always see the, you know, all the natives when they hold their hands up, like they're holding, you know, up to the sky. Now I don't look down. I always look up because it's so big.
Mm-hmm.
And all before I let him go, and I got, you know, I had to let him go because I didn't want him to be stuck in, you know, I wanted him to move on because I wanted him to be happy. Yeah. Even so much pain,
mm-hmm,
that I feel like he's gone, you know, like I used to feel his presence, you know, a lot, but I really did have to let him go, you know. I wanted him to cross over.
Yeah.
You know, and there's times I felt him behind my chair, like, or I'd do dishes and I could feel his hands on my shoulders. I don't feel it anymore. And sometimes I feel really sad, you know, but I had to let him go.
Yeah, that's tough. I can't imagine.
And you know, this court stuff is gonna be so hard, because how am I gonna go through this court stuff knowing that they did this to my boy? You know, how am I gonna survive this?
Yeah.
Yes, you know.
We're going to keep you, you know, in our thoughts, and we'll pray for you and help you get through it, I hope.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's going to be tough, but, you know, just remember we're thinking about you and praying for the best.
Thank you for letting us tell our story, even though we jumped around. It's just that we have a second omnibus and it keeps getting pushed, you know.
And, you know, like, I know with your story, you know, putting it out here the way that it happened, I know you're giving hope to other families, because there's a lot of families that missing somebody and they don't know what to do. They don't know how to go about it. The law enforcement's not helping. And just by showing that you guys, you know, you went out there and you did it, you found it, that's giving hope to a lot of families. And it's really encouraging people who might be, you know, at rock bottom, and they're gonna, you know, it's gonna lift them up.
All right.
And it'll probably take me a little bit to edit our audio and then record the story. And then if there's anything that you wanted to share, I'll put your GoFundMe on our page and on our Facebooks to help you guys in any way that we can in our community.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you taking your time out. And I know it's hard to talk about it. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate it. And we hope that this helps you and helps, you know, your family.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
We wanted to give a big thank you to Ricky's mother and his sister for joining us and doing an interview, and especially during a difficult time and how difficult it was to just even talk about it. But they want justice for Ricky, and that's why they wanted to share their story. And we just want to say thank you, everybody, for listening today. Don't forget to support Ricky's family. Justice for Ricky. You can donate to them the links in our Instagram and our Facebook.
Share the flyer.
Share it on Facebook. Share the flyer.
Send up prayers for the family for strength and support.
Yes. Lots of prayers for them during this difficult time. And that concludes today's episode. We want to, don't forget to check out our website at www.NativeSistersPodcast.com. Or Instagram and Facebook at Native Sisters Podcast.
Or send us an email, nativesisterspodcast@gmail.com.
And thank you. We'll see you next time.
See ya.